The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him, and he stayed close to the sea. One of the synagogue officials, named Jairus, came forward. Seeing him, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him, saying, "My daughter is at the point of death. Please, come lay your hands on her, that she may get well and live." He went off with him, and a large crowd followed him and pressed upon him. There was a woman afflicted with a hemorrhage for 12 years. She had suffered greatly at the hands of many doctors and had spent all that she had. Yet she was not helped, but only grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. She said, "If I but touch his clothes, I shall be cured." Immediately her flow of blood dried up. She felt in her body that she had been healed of her affliction. Jesus, aware at once that power had gone out from him, turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who has touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to Jesus, "You see how the crowd is pressing upon you, and yet you ask, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. The woman, realizing what had happened to her, approached in fear and trembling. She fell down before Jesus and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has saved you. Go in peace and be cured of your affliction." While he was still speaking, people from the synagogue official's house arrived and said, "Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher any longer?" Disregarding the message that was reported, Jesus said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid, just have faith." He did not allow anyone to accompany him inside except Peter, James, and John, brother of James. When they arrived at the house of the synagogue official, he caught sight of a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. So he went in and said to them, "Why this commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but asleep." And they ridiculed him. Then he put them all out. He took along the child's father and mother and those who were with them and entered the room where the child was. He took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." The girl, a child of 12, arose immediately and walked around. At that, they were utterly astounded. He gave strict orders that no one should know this, and said that she should be given something to eat. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Before delving into this gospel, I want to just frame it with that first reading, because there's like two lines from the first reading I want to keep as background for as we go through the gospel. And the two lines are at the very beginning and the end. The first one is, God did not make death. God did not make death. Nor does he rejoice in the destruction of the living or the suffering of the living. That's the first one. Death is not from God. Just like get that like really in there. And then the last one is like, well, where did it come from? But by the envy of the devil, death entered the world. Death came from the envy of the devil. He saw what God had created and he was envious of this goodness and this bounty and just his envy for that. He wanted it for himself, but he can't do that. He can't make stuff. He can't create. He can't give life. He just wanted somehow to try to destroy it, fight against it. And so where there is death and suffering, that's not God. That's the devil. And us, too, for that matter. Okay, so keep that's backdrop. Now, when we go into this gospel here, what I wanted to to kind of highlight is any time that there's a miracle of some kind that Jesus does, there's somebody that's been suffering an awful lot. And when we delve into that, I think that's where we can find parallels for our own situations, whatever they might be. And so we have the first situation is this synagogue official named Jairus, and he has a daughter who's very sick, and he knows, and all the people, the rest of his family knows, that this girl is not going to make it more than an hour or so. And so they're rushing out to go find the master. They heard that he just came back across the lake. Thanks be to God, he was away for a number of days. This is so providential. It's just working out just so right. He just got here in the nick of time. If I just go down and ask him and beg of him to come, because I know he can do this. I know he can heal my daughter before she dies. And so he goes down there, able to probably elbow his way into the crowd, and which is all around him. He's able to get in front. He probably shoves some people, and then they're probably, hey, what are you doing? But anyways, he gets in there, and he explains the situation to the Lord, and our Lord, without even saying a word, just goes, okay, let's go. And they're starting for it. And you imagine the relief. Like, I can't believe this is working out. Everything's just falling right into place just in the nick of time. Until somebody else, Jairus is pushing forward, and all of a sudden realizes that Jesus has stopped and he's not following right behind him anymore. And he looks back, and Jesus is like back in the crowd a ways away. He's like, no, Jesus, we got to go now. It's like there isn't a moment to spare. Yet Jesus is kind of like turning around, and he's like confused, and the disciples are confused, and they're saying, "Well, who touched Jesus?" Well, it was like the 6 train on at rush hour. It's like everyone's all packed in there. Everyone's touching everybody. It's like, what do you mean? Who's touching you? And Jesus is asking this, and that's when this woman comes forward. Now she has her own story of suffering that hasn't been over the past few days, as it's been for Jairus and his daughter. It's been 12 years. By the way, Jairus' daughter is 12. This lady's been suffering for 12 years. Jesus was 18, if you do the math, when this lady first got sick and was still years away, 12 years away from doing any kind of public ministry. So you can imagine, what was that woman's prayer like in this first 6 months of this this hemorrhage that she had? Now, as you might recall, when it comes to blood flow infections, in like a hemorrhage like this, she would be considered ritually impure, and so she couldn't worship in the temple. She couldn't be with her family in the same way, and her husband, and she in a certain way she'd be kind of like isolated and ostracized, but not just for a weekend, but for starting with 6 months, and that's going to be quite a burden. Think, well, maybe I'll recover. Maybe I'll get my health back. Lord, please heal me. And then what's that prayer like after a year, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years? You can imagine she's probably starting to get frustrated and wondering, is he really listening? Does he know how hard this is? Okay, Lord, if you need this, I'll keep going, but this is really hard. I'm sure her family and her husband also praying. 6 years turns into 10 years, turns into 11 years, turns into 11 years in 9 months, and still nothing. Finally, she hears about this man, this one that's they're attributing these miraculous cures, and she goes, and she knows she's not allowed to touch him, but she, in just in desperation, I've got to somehow. So she waited till there's a lot of people around there, so no one would know it was her, or that she was getting close and just kind of bump in by accident, something like that. But she reaches out and touches, but she's doing this with great faith, hoping, pleading for. We know what she was thinking, because she would have told everybody afterwards. Yeah, I was just thinking that if only I just touch his cloak. And then she feels in her body she was cured. Imagine what was that like? the sense of, like, I've heard some people describe cures, like miraculous cures, be like, there's like an intense heat in that part, or like electricity running through their whole body. And immediately she knew what had just taken place. Jesus knew what had just taken place. And here's a curious thing. He didn't need to know that she was going to reach out and touch him. It's like an automatic withdrawal. Just get close enough, just have faith, and he's not even paying attention. He's following this other man. He's being jostled by the crowd. And it's almost like it automatically goes out of him. It's like he's got that such a generous disposition. I mean, this is his divinity at work here, that it just flows, the power just flows right out of him freely, abundantly. And she's amazed at what's taking place. She had to wait 12 years for that. Why? Why 12? Couldn't it have been less? Now, right now, we go back to our friend Jairus, who is getting so close to the miracle he so badly needed, so badly wanted for his daughter, and he gets the worst news. It's like the biggest disappointment, tragedy. Jairus, I'm sorry, your daughter's dead now, so no need to bring the master here. Just, he's got other people he can help. So close. And he's probably thinking, we were 3 minutes away. 3 minutes. Lord, why couldn't we have just in those 3 minutes had this play out right? For once, please, Lord, I've been serving you all my life in the temple here, in the synagogue. And just those 3 minutes, that couldn't have worked out. And Jesus, he overhears what's going on and tells him, do not be afraid, but have faith. Now, you heard how it plays out. They go in there and there's all the mourners and the family and this weeping and wailing and this tragedy. I mean, that's tragic, a 12-year-old. And Jesus says, she's not dead, she's sleeping. Now, I think Jesus actually knows she's dead, and everyone else knows she's dead. Jesus said the same thing about Lazarus, by the way. He is not dead, he is sleeping. Now, he was dead, but then he later says, to be clear, you know, yes, he is actually dead. But for God, sleep, what's that? Illness, what's that? You're asleep, you're wake up. You're dead, you're going to wake up. And so he goes in and raises the girl from the dead. And you just imagine the impact that would have had on the family for the rest of their lives. And the little girl herself would be the one for the next 60 years, 70 years, would be telling the story when she was a little girl and 12, and it was 3 minutes too late, yet it's never too late for God. And he came and he healed me, and my parents just told me those. I didn't realize how much this impacted my parents until later. They were telling me when I was old enough to understand. And so it would have had a lifelong impact on her too. And she would have been telling everybody, if you got healed from being dead, wouldn't you just tell everybody that for the rest of your life? So now, I want to just close this off here. Remember, God did not make death. And he does not rejoice in the destruction or the suffering of the living. He didn't want to have these kinds of things happen. This came from the devil. And that's all subject for another homily. But when Christ comes on the scene, what is he always doing? He's always healing. He's always curing. He's always restoring. He's always giving life. He's always giving joy, giving meaning. And he's raising from the dead. Always. We don't see him do the opposite anywhere. He doesn't strike anybody dead in the gospel. Okay, that's out of line. He doesn't do that. And so I think that should be at least one help for us towards okay, well, if I'm on year 10 of a 12-year assignment, this is the devil's doing, but I can trust in God's timing. If I was 3 minutes, 90 seconds away from something that was so important, so needed, and it doesn't play out, trust in God's timing, even if it involves death. Because he's got only one way he responds to these things, and it's always with goodness and love and healing.